is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name is Matt Brand. Welcome to the Country Hour. On the program today, we bring you all of the results and action from the 2021 yearling sale in Alice Springs.
You don't make money doing this stuff, I promise you, but sometimes you don't lose money. It's about the fun, the thrill. The trainers of these horses are just absolutely gorgeous people. They love it, the game.
Beef Week is underway in Rockhampton. We'll be taking you there shortly. And first it was the plague, and now it's the mouse poo that's causing problems for Aussie grain growers.
There's been some fantastic sorghum yields around, but unfortunately with these contamination issues from the beloved bloody mice, it's creating problems at both ends now.
Yeah, mouse poo contamination causing big problems for our exporters. I'll tell you more about this before 1:30 today. We're broadcasting across the territory on the ABC this public holiday. I trust you are well. If you need a duck out for whatever reason, or maybe you're about to lose radio reception on your drive, you can always catch us via the podcast. Now, this year we've been hearing a lot about how tough business is for Australian abattoirs. With record high cattle prices and tight supply, it's estimated that some abattoirs have been losing up to $300 per animal. Now, while a lot of meatworks have wound down some of their capacity during this tough time, so far we haven't seen any widespread shutdowns. But is the industry getting towards a bit of a tipping point? Our news today is that the only abattoir in northern WA has decided to close its doors for 2021. The Yeada Abattoir, located between Broome and Derby, it opened with a lot of fanfare back in 2016. Last year, it processed around 40,000 head of cattle. But this year, nothing. According to Executive Chairman Mervyn Key, the record high cattle prices have made it very tough to do business.
Whilst it's been a wonderful boon to all the pastoralists here in the Kimberley, including ourselves, as we have six stations up here in the Kimberley, everyone's benefiting from these high prices. But with my processor hat on, clearly it doesn't pay to buy cattle at these levels and process that and either sell it on the local market or, as what we normally do, is export it. Due to the pandemic, a lot of restaurants and service industries in the US and in Europe have been closed for the past 12 months. That has resulted in a lower demand for meat. And as a result of that, there hasn't been the consequential increase in the price of meat that one would expect. And so we're a little bit out of sync at the moment with very high cattle prices and meat prices not really having reacted yet. So that led to our decision not to open this year and to rather work on the plant and get it up to speed. It's been operating efficiently for the last 5 years, so we can spend some time on the floor of the operation and plan to reopen in March of next year. With hopefully the market at that stage having righted itself, and also with our new plan of having a co-op type structure where we have 5 or 6 pastoralists in the Kimberley join us in an operating company, which is going to be effectively leasing the abattoir and all the equipment, and starting the new operation next year on that basis.
Yeah, you sound pretty confident that a reopening in 2022 will occur. You mentioned that you'd had some enthusiasm from pastoralists around the northwest about this sort of buying into this sort of co-op model that you're investigating. Can you let us know sort of what interest you've had? Who's interested in buying in?
We had a lot of interest from at least five or six pastoralists in this area and indeed in the Northern Territory. Everyone has asked at this stage not to throw their names around the place, which I obviously respect and won't do until they agree for me to do that. And so, yes, I am confident that we will certainly get our new team together that will be operating the abattoir in 2022.
That's the Yiyarra Pastoral Company's Executive Chairman, Mervyn Key, speaking there to Courtney Fowler. That's a big decision over there in the Kimberley, a decision not to open the Yiyarra Abattoir this year. It processed 40,000 head of cattle last year, nothing for 2021. The Kimberley Pilbara Cattlemen's Association says it is disappointed but not surprised by this decision. KPCA Chairman David Stoat says he'll be hoping everything goes to plan and the facility will reopen in 2022.
It is disappointing that it won't be open. The KMC facility has been an important part of the marketing options for producers here in the north. So, look, that is very disappointing. It's also disappointing for the KMC workforce who are probably without a job this year, and obviously face an uncertain future, so that's disappointing. But look, it's not surprising. I mean, cattle prices are very high, and it's a difficult time to be in the meat processing business, I guess.
Yeah, and we have seen data from MLA come out this week that suggested that slaughter rates are at the lowest point in the last 35 years, which I suppose, as you say, is a product of the high prices and eastern states producers also trying to rebuild the herd. Do you think that's sort of what has knocked Yiyarra's abattoir for a six year?
Yeah, well, I'm sure it is, yeah. Look, producers are rebuilding in the east and probably to a little lesser extent here in the Kimberley after a few dry years. So, yeah, look, the supply has dried up for processors all over Australia, and including here in the Kimberley. So having said that we still have the option of sending cattle to the processors in the south of the state, and they have been active in the market. So that they are looking after us. It's just a long taxi ride, obviously, for the cattle to get there.
Given that how far away the nearest processing facility is in Western Australia and even across the border in the Territory, it's still a good, couple of thousand kilometres. What sort of impact does this have on local pastoralists, David?
Obviously we're getting good prices for cattle going on boats and, there are the good prices for cattle you can send south. So, look, in that way, pastoralists will get through all right. It's just nice to have that as many marketing options that you can. And in the 5 years it's been around, the facility has been a good marketing option for us.
And looking at the announcement made by Yiyarra, it does indicate that the closure is not permanent. It says that the plan is to reopen next year. It sounds like it is opening up the ownership of the abattoir, presumably to consolidate costs into some sort of co-op type model. Is that something you think pastoralists would welcome the opportunity to join into that ownership structure?
Yeah, look, I mean, the idea has been floated a few times, over the years, I've heard it. Producers here definitely would like to keep that marketing option, I'm sure. So if that meant putting their hand in the pocket to invest in it, I mean, some of them probably would, I think. It's just, it really, really depends on the sort of finer details, of the structure of the cooperative and how much it costs to invest and what you get for the investment and the management of it and the control of it and that sort of thing. So it's certainly an interesting concept that it'd be good if it could work. I mean, it is meat processing, we know, is a very difficult industry for those involved in it. There's always plenty of facilities that are not operational. So, and you've got the one in the Northern Territory that's been mothballed for a couple of years. So I think producers are tread fairly warily. Again, it's just, you know, what you're getting for your investment and how it's structured and all those finer details be, you know, important to give people the confidence to invest.
At the end of the day, I guess pastoralists will just be crossing their fingers that this isn't a permanent closure.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, that was an encouraging thing. It doesn't seem that it is permanent. So we hope it can operate in some form in the future, definitely.
David Stoad, he's the chair of the Kimberley Pilbara Cattlemen's Association. Just repeating the headline, the Yeeta Abattoir between Broome and Derby, it will be closed for 2021. This is the only abattoir in northern WA, and it will not be processing this year. You can read more about it online if you go searching for ABC Rural. Now, here in the Northern Territory, the huge AACo abattoir near Darwin, it remains mothballed. And the Bachelor abattoir, it has not resumed processing yet this year. I know the company is hoping to start soon, but high cattle prices have definitely played a role in their startup being delayed. The abattoir there at Bachelor is hoping to process a lot of buffalo this year, and buffalo are certainly much cheaper than cattle at the moment. The buffalo industry, it knows this, and it actually met on Friday to talk about increasing supply to the Bachelor Meatworks and to the live export trade. I'll tell you more about it after this tune by Neil Murray. Good lad and Broome, right across the territory on the ABC. You are tuned into the Country Hour. Now, those involved in the territory's buffalo industry met in Darwin on Friday to talk about the year ahead and, in particular, how to boost supply. It's shaping up to be a busy year for the industry. It's aiming to muster up 16,000 head of buffalo just for the Bachelor Abattoir, and then, on top of that, get some animals for the live export trade. Louise Bilardo is from the NT Buffalo Industry Council. She's speaking here to Dan Fitzgerald.
Today was designed to look at the critical issues impacting supply. We know that it's going to be a big year for buffalo, and we wanted to be able to properly identify, not just for the short term, but for the long term, what we need to do to create a sustainable industry for buffalo in the Northern Territory.
What are the main challenges holding back supply of buffalo at the moment?
Well, there's quite a lot of challenges, unfortunately, as you know, because the vast majority of the population is not behind wire. It's in Arnhem Land. So one of them, the big issues is around access and Section 19 land use agreement approvals. And there is, particularly in Maningrida, a environmental risk that's been emerging for some time. So yeah, we do need to get action happening through the approval process, but that is a whole series of steps, and it was really good to have the NLC in the room today to talk about some of the challenges that they face, but also the things that they would like the industry to be able to provide more specific sources of truth for them around the buffalo numbers. We also talked about royalty payments and potentially different methods of negotiating what those royalty amounts that flow back to traditional owners really need to be, because it has to be a viable industry, and so the royalty payments has to be realistic.
Now, the NLC told you today that there's something like 500 Section 19 applications in those of the contracts that govern businesses on Indigenous land. What does that mean for buffalo musterers, having so many applications in before the NLC?
Well, yeah, what we learned today was that obviously those that are areas where there's oil and gas issues, or where there's other, you know, larger ventures, you know, some of them have costed, you know, over $500,000 in terms of the consultation and negotiation process. But some of them have more urgent deadlines, and again that you know they can be cancelled because of access to you know the right traditional owner clan groups being able to either come into town or to be able to be available on country to do those consultations. So it's not a a smooth little you know conduit and a you know completion of a task. It might be that they have to go back half a dozen times to negotiate with traditional owners about a proposal as well. So I guess what we heard today, besides the scary number of Section 19 applications that they're having to deal with, it's all the other issues that also take time and cost a lot of money. So even though the number of buffalo applications is small, they're in this much bigger mix of workload for the Land Council.
So overall, the outlook for the industry this year, what do things look like?
Oh, very solid. So again, Central Agri Group were in the room and we were acknowledging very positively the price grid that they put out for May, which is $1.50 for cows, $1.75 for bulls, that they will be, so this is over 400 kilo animals, 450 kilos, sorry, that they will be paying significantly more than they were prepared to pay last year or in a position to pay last year. So the Rumjungle Abattoir is suddenly very much a, you know, a central pivot for the industry and for contractors. So, you know, it will make part of the supply chain viable and it will ensure that contractors do what they're required to do, and that is to take off the full suite of buffalo, not just cherry pick those where they're going to actually make money.
Louise Bilardo from the NT Buffalo Industry Council. So as you're hearing, the buffalo industry is aiming to sell a lot of animals to the Bachelor Abattoir this year. But what about the live export trade? Patrick Underwood is from the exporting company ACE, Australian Cattle Enterprises. He says with record high cattle prices at the moment, buffalo are looking like a really attractive option for exporters.
Well, there's a couple of main drivers, but one of them is the very expensive Australian cattle. So the cattle prices have been, you know, record highs for several months and very slow to come back just due to a shortage of supply of cattle. So certainly the difference between cattle price and buffalo prices is, you know, an increasing focus from our customers across a range of markets for buffalo.
Does that mean there's going to be more buffalo exported this year?
I think so. So, look, we've last year the buffalo mainly went to Indonesia and Vietnam. But already this year we've seen some buffalo go to Malaysia and Brunei. So if you look at, and there's also some demand from countries like Sarawak. So really that's four or five countries who are very keen on Northern Territory buffalo. There's obviously some new rules and regulations out around ASIL that are going to mean that we have to be prepare buffalo in a more stringent, careful environment. That's not a bad thing, but it does cost money.
Yeah, can you talk us more about that? What does that ASIL 3.0 mean?
Just from an exporter, buffalo have to be prepared longer pre-export, so they've got to do five clear days. There's some onboard spacing requirements, reporting requirements around any issues with buffalo, and just, yeah, a number of things, mainly in the preparation and the shipping.
There was some concern that ASIL 3.0 will not make it worth shipping heavier buffalo. Do you think that's going to be the case?
Look, heavier buffalo probably carry a higher risk. The simple fact is young buffalo adapt more quickly to different environments, whether that's pre-export quarantine or whether that's on a ship. So definitely bigger buffalo have to be managed more carefully. I think what's good news for the buffalo industry in general is the Bachelor Abattoir or the Rumjungle facility there has just come out with their price of buffalo this year, and it's considerably higher than last year for both cows and heavy bulls. So that's a pretty good position for the industry to be in, whereby you know, a lot of heavy animals, particularly if they're older, or probably deemed to be higher risk animals for live export, can be processed here domestically.
What sort of prices are live export buffalo getting at the moment?
$2 plus, yeah, around, you know, from up to $2.20. Historically, that's, I think last year was mainly around the $1.70 for heifers and $2 for males. So, you know, it's not a huge increase. One thing that buffalo, we often get asked, you know, why the buffalo price is lower compared to cattle. The basic reason is there's a lot of buffalo in our markets that we're exporting to. There are a local buffalo herd there, and there's also a lot of imports of Indian buffalo meat, which is all low-priced product compared to Australian cattle. So it's just, it's a little, you know, we've got great buffalo here and a good industry, but we're still competing with local buffalo and other cheap Indian buffalo that's imported into those markets. So we do face some competition up there.
There's a big discussion today about just trying to make the most of the buffalo industry and get more buffalo out onto the market. What do you see as the main challenges that are holding the industry back at the moment?
I think, Ax, there's still access issues. A lot of buffalo are in Arnhem Land, in Aboriginal-owned land, and it was pretty interesting with the Northern Land Council talking today around the number of groups, number of clans, and number of different traditional owners across a whole raft of areas across there. So there's definitely some access issues, and also no doubt geography. A lot of these buffalo are deep in Arnhem Land, far away from roads and access. So I think the main constriction is supply, because the demand side there, look, from a live export process, I could say, you know, myself, there's, you know, we've got some really good demand for the product. I know the processing plant at Bachelors did 7,000 last year. They're really keen to get up to 15,000 this year. So I think it'll be supply restrictions rather than demand.
That is Patrick Underwood, the Managing Director of Australian Cattle Enterprises. It is 4-1 on the Country Hour. Now, for beef and buffalo producers, it's all roads lead to Rockhampton this week for Beef Week. It's Beef 21, biggest event on the cattle calendar. Thousands of people are there. There's a few Territorians in the crowd. We'll try and catch up with them during the week. Chair of Beef Australia is Bryce Cam. He says the expo this year has a real focus on ag tech.
Traditionally, we've taken each expo every 3 years in a new direction and added new elements to the program, and this year is no different. So the first time we've launched the Ken Coombs Tech Yards, which really is a feature on ag tech and innovation. And I guess the board and the organising team felt there's so much discussion around data, remote sensing technology and innovative products coming to the agricultural field, but specifically the Australian beef industry. And down here in the Tech Yards display, we've got an outstanding array of both established and emergent businesses, both practical and virtual technologies that we really think will be the future and driving force of our Australian beef sector.
So that's the innovation to make it more profitable. And clearly everyone knows beef prices are going very well. You're doing well on a profitability scorecard. But what about sort of some other areas, things like climate change, sustainability in the industry? They're topics you're hitting here.
Absolutely. I think it's well known in the Australian beef industry, sustainability and the discussion around it has been a big part of our industry for many generations. And that's no different as we have that conversation with the wider community currently. On Wednesday morning, Tuesday morning, we launched the Australian Beef Sustainability Report update. So that's a very exciting feature of our program. But you're right, the application and the merger of technology and its relationship with sustainability is another part that we're featuring here in the Ken Coombe Tech Yards.
I note on the program a lot of sessions dubbed Mythbusters. Does the beef industry have an image issue? Why Mythbusters? Do you have to justify your existence? What's with that?
Nothing like a catchy title on a program to get people into a seminar. But look, it's more about that conversation, and that's a big part of Beef Australia is our education element. For the first time in 2021, we are virtualising the entire education program, over 70 talks and seminars throughout the week, an immense effort, and graciously that is through a virtual network for people that unfortunately are unable to join us here in the beef capital in Rockhampton. But it's not really about, you know, about being ashamed or embarrassed about anything or around those confrontational topics, but it's really being forthright and opening the discussion to the floor. And I think that's something that the Australian beef industry has always done quite well, is to be unashamedly have the conversation with the wider community and ourselves as an industry to really look at what we are doing and where we can always advance and improve going forward. And that's why I'm so passionate about this event, but about our industry, because I think we've got some great people across this sector, and I think culturally this industry is always looking for the next opportunity. It's always trying to be on the front foot, and it's always ready to be honest and have that conversation with the wider community, both around a sustainability piece, but also the safety and the health and the great reputation that high-quality Australian beef has.
That's Bryce Cam, Chair of Beef Australia, speaking there to Ali Felton-Taylor. If you can't make it to Rocky, don't worry. The Country Hour will have plenty of stories from Beef Week across the next few days. It's news time on the ABC, 1 o'clock.
G'day, it's Mick Jacoby here from NT Hay Seed and Grain. I'm just gearing up to grow some hemp in the Douglas Daily, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brand with you this afternoon. In a moment, we'll be bringing you all of the results and action from the 2021 yearling sale in Alice Springs.
You don't make money doing this stuff, I promise you, but sometimes you don't lose money. It's about the fun, the thrill. The trainers of these horses are just absolutely gorgeous people. They love it, the game.
Yeah, the yearling sale was held on Friday evening, and of course the Alice Springs Cup held yesterday. I wonder if you were one of the happy punters in the crowd. Looked like a beautiful day there at Pioneer Park from all the pictures and videos I've seen. Did you head along? As always, you can get in touch with the Country Hour via our text number 0487 99 1057. We were talking earlier about the Yida Abattoir in northern WA closing its doors for 2021. Keith in Mille Lacs says, seriously, building an abattoir in Australia rates with building desalination plants never used once built. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Ange Prasad is there this afternoon. Is there much to report from the weekend gone, Ange?
Hi there, Matt. Not really. It was a beautiful, dry weekend right across the territory. So very little rainfall, and mostly on the east coast and the north coast, and also around the Tiwi Islands. The highest I saw was Muganella in the last 3 days, reported 4 millimetres. McClure got 6 millimetres. Gove Airport reported 1 millimetre. But yeah, pretty dry right across the territory. The days were warm throughout, including through central Australia, warmer than average. But nights have been rather pleasant. A good example is Catherine. It dropped down to 16 degrees last night, and that's about a degree less than my average. So nice, cool overnight temperatures, but days generally have been warmer than average. And that's one of the reasons is cloudless skies, sunny skies. So very little cloud cover, if any.
Mm. And so the week ahead for the Northern Territory, what's the forecast?
It's a bit topsy-turvy through central Australia. So there is a slightly cooler change heading through the Lassiter and the Simpson tomorrow. Weak trough is moving through today, but no weather expected. There will be a cooler change. Now, this cooler change will drop the temperatures a few degrees, but the temperatures will stay above average. The cooler temperatures last for a couple of days, but back to warmer conditions on Thursday and Friday. And we're looking at a cloud band through central Australia, most likely starting on Thursday night going into Friday. So there might be some precipitation through parts of the Lassiter and the Simpson from Friday into Saturday. But the cloud band does weaken off this weekend, the coming weekend, and there's a much better cooler change extending through central Australia next weekend. In the north, the very isolated coastal showers will continue about the north and east coasts, but becoming even more isolated from about midweek. Dry days are expected to continue, especially over inland parts of the top end. Darwin The humidity has been dropping to around 30%, which is quite dry in the afternoons. But the late sea breezes have been bringing in some moisture. So the evenings have been feeling a little bit muggy. But overnight
beautiful mornings at the moment. Beautiful yes. mornings.
Yes. So, but yeah, overnight temperatures are falling below 24 degrees. So the mornings have been quite pleasant.
For our commercial fishers, what are coastal waters expected to do this week?
Coastal waters are a bit breezy over the next couple of days, so getting up to 25 knots in most places. Mm. Later in the week, the winds will ease to 15 to 20 knots, and the direction will be from the east-southeast.
Anything else we need to be aware of right now?
No, we're not really looking at much weather this week until later in the week when we see the cloud bend in Central Australia.
Beauty. All right then. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hello, I'm Dennis Kiernoth, and I'm the manager of White River Beef, and I like nothing better than sitting down lunchtime listening to Matty Brand on the Country Hour.
And I hope you are well this Monday lunchtime. The Alice Springs Cup was on yesterday. I've been told it was a good crowd there at Pioneer Park. And well done to the connections of I Am The Fox, which took out the big one, took out the Alice Cup for 2021. And well done also to the organisers of the yearling sale, which was held on Friday evening. The sale was cancelled last year because of you know what, but it made a great comeback there on Friday. There was some pretty decent money forked out. Hugo Rickard-Bell went along for the Country Hour.
The high heels are off and the punters' hands are twitching as the annual Alice Springs yearling sale is about to kick off. There's one colt in particular that everyone had their eye on, including the chairman of the Alice Springs Turf Club, Craig Lamley.
I think number five will be the Fox Wedge. He's my pick of the yard and I think he's quite impressive. But it's a lottery, to be honest. I've had many successes out of the sale and a couple of failures, but it's just the way it is. When you buy a young horse, you can get an absolute champion. You're not buying someone else's broken down stuff that are in the tried horses, but it's just the way it is. So fingers crossed we get a couple of champions out of this sale and they can race in the territory similar to both the favourites in the cup, which is That's Justified and Pagman.
All right, Foxbridge, you got to tell me, what separates him from the rest of the lots?
He's just a terrific type. Just a terrific type of horse. He's well put together. He's got some great legs. He's got a nice big arse on him and, you know, a good shoulder. So he's my pick of the yard.
Oh, it is a nice colt. It's a colt like Foxbridge. He's coming to ring it out. Have a look at the chestnut colt.
The moment had arrived. The chestnut colt with the white glaze had entered the ring. As Fox Wedge strutted around in front of the bubbling crowd, the bidding started at $5,000. Hands started darting up and down in the air as if each prospective buyer was trying to get the attention of someone they thought they recognised. The auctioneer seemed to be using the full width of his wingspan as he pointed at the climbing bids that were popping up all over the place. As the bidding reached over $12,500, the crowd started to settle, and the final call was made. CEO of the Alice Springs Turf Club, Tom Slattery, was hoping for some strong bidding after the long-anticipated return to the country races that was so sorely missed last year.
It's been a great, great sale, Hugo. We put 10 horses through the ring, 10 young yearlings, a total of $77,400. Very impressed with that for the night. Our top sale was a chestnut colt by Fox Wedge out of Vintner. Fabulous-looking colt. Brought $13,500, went to a local owner, Craig Reed, who's been a great supporter of these sales over the years. Great to see people out here and great to have Red Centre Yearling Sale back at the track.
And so, I mean, recently or in recent years, you have put up the tried horses before. What pushed the change?
Feedback from the local owners and trainers was that they preferred the yearling sale to give them an opportunity to get a young horse and follow it through in its career. Buying a tried horse, as it sounds, tried, somebody's seen what it can do and you end up with a value according there. A yearling, it's an unknown. You can end up with things like Paraduki with the 700,000 it's won, or the couple going around in the cup this year. That's justified. And Pagman, so that have gone through the yearling sales previously. Both great horses and running in the Alice Springs Cup on Sunday. Not something that probably come from a tried horse sale.
The lucky buyer of Fox Wedge, Craig Reed, was no stranger to bidding at the Alice Springs yearling sale. He says he can't wait to see the progression of the latest member to his equine family.
Well, it'll sit down now, it'll get broken in, and as it's a colt at the moment, it'll be gelded. We'll probably race him one or two times as a two-year-old against some three-year-olds. He'll come back then as a three-year-old. So when you buy a yearling, you actually look forward to the end of the two-year-old season, so you see him become three-year-olds, and you know when you buy one, that's your target, that's your goal. And then as three-year-olds, you see them grow, and they're actually beautiful animals, and they come 4 or 5 year-olds. And normally a lot of them sort of start maturing around 5, 6 year-olds, and that's when you start having a lot of fun with them.
Now, tell me, when you're standing in the crowd and your hands flying up at numbers and that sort of thing, what is it about buying a yearling that keeps you coming back? You just told us you've bought a couple, top three in the last 9 top horses.
Yeah, the last 30 years I've been lucky enough to have 3 out of the top 9 money winners, and it's been through more good luck than anything else. But the thrill of seeing these horses win, and like, it don't quite tear up or anything, but I tell you what, there's something about it, and I'm probably the worst at yelling at the horses up the straight. I'm not sure how they win because they've got like 90 odd kilos on the back, which is me, you know, cheering them on, and it's a feeling you cannot sort of tell people about. You've got to experience, and I love the yearling sales, and the more people can get involved with racing here, seeing these horses do what they do, it's just about fun. And that's what, you don't make money doing this stuff, I promise you, but sometimes you don't lose money. It's about the fun, the thrill. The trainers of these horses are just absolutely gorgeous people. They love it, the game.
Hey Craig, before I let you go, mate, tell me, I mean, I'm looking at these horses walking around, they're beautiful looking animals. Have you ever been tempted to jump on yourself?
Oh Christ, I'd break their back. But no, I'm happy to go and pat them if they'll let me pat them. But no, not tempted at all. I'm actually lucky. This is the first time I haven't bought more than one horse, so I'm doing good tonight. So thanks for pulling away from the yearling sales.
I was just going to say, the auction's still going. Do we let you go, or do you want to keep talking?
Definitely not. My worst episode one year was 4 horses, so yeah, I'm not doing that ever again.
No worries. Thanks so much for taking time to chat with us.
That's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yeah, big thanks to Craig Reed there at the yearling sale on Friday night in the Alice, and he picked up that top price colt, which sold for $13,500. All up, the sale there on Friday grossed $77,400, average price of $7,740. Now, as I mentioned earlier, it was the horse I Am the Fox, which took out yesterday's Alice Springs Cup. The winning jockey was Jason John Lyon. He actually caught up with Hugo on that Friday night and had a chat about his career and what it was like first saddling up.
Well, it was pretty nerve-wracking early doors, but I've been riding 21 years now, so, I have the first few rides now, you get a little bit nervous, but once you know what you're doing, it's sort of just business as usual, you know. It's sort of, if you're riding a real good horse, it's pretty easy, you just hang on and steer them around and give them a clear run and they do the rest. Obviously it can get a bit of nerve-wracking if the horse is rearing up or playing up. I got one today that had a bit of a rear and slipped out the barriers and knuckled down, and it was odds on favourite and got beat. So, you know, that's racing though, so it can happen, you know.
The bell goes, the gates open. Can you just describe to me what it's like having, you know, an animal like that underneath you, you know, running the track?
Yeah, so see, up here on the dirt track racing, there's a few different sort of things that can go wrong, because the horses might not handle the dirt, like the dirt in their face, so some horses got to keep them up out of the dirt, or some of them they're not worried about the kickback in their face. But I could say it's a pretty amazing feeling when you ride a serious, like a group horse or something down in Victoria. Yeah, it's just a really good feeling, yeah. Just a machine.
You've been riding for 21 years. What keeps you jumping back on?
Oh, just the, obviously, the winning feeling, you know what I mean? Like, I've ridden all around Australia. I rode in Adelaide for 10 years, and I've spent the last sort of 11 years in Victoria, but I've ridden up in Queensland and mainly Victoria and Tasmania. I was recently riding in Tasmania, but, yeah, just the winning feeling, even if you're having a bit of a bad run. And, you know, like, I've got heaps of mates that own horses and stuff, and it's really, really great when you ride a winner for them. So, yeah, and when you get on a real good horse, it's even better.
And how good is it for you that country races are back after a pretty slow year last year?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, I was obviously down in Victoria over the lockdown. We were able to race the whole time. I was injured for a part of that time, but no, it's good to be back up here in the NT, and I've got some good rides on Sunday in the sprint and the cup, so I'm pretty excited. Yeah, got real good rides.
Yeah, you're riding Sunday. What are you anticipating? What are you hoping for?
Yeah, I've got a horse called I'm the Fox in the Alice Springs Cup, so he's a really good horse, and he gets on him with a light weight. He was very impressive in Darwin last start. He hit the line real powerful, and he drops like 6.5 kilos in weight, so we expect him to be very hard to beat. And obviously the horse in the sprint, he was his first run here the other day, and he come from Victoria, and he had a couple of runs in South Australia, very impressive. His first run on the track, he smashed him, won easy, so horse called Stage Front. So I think I can ride the two features.
That is jockey Jason Lyon. He said, I am the Fox would be hard to beat, and he was bang on. I hope Hugo was paying proper attention and put a few dollars on. Well done to Jason. Well done to the connections of I Am The Fox. Great that the yearling sale was back on this year. Sad to hear, though, about the Bengtail Muster Parade in Alice Springs. We mentioned this on Friday. It didn't happen last year because of COVID, and didn't happen this year because of a lack of volunteers, which is a real shame. I'm going to play a quick tune by Teddy Egan, and then I'll be telling you about sorghum growers in New South Wales and Queensland. Their yields are up, but they're facing a lot of problems in the export market because of mice poo.
In the outback, it's a pretty big job when a cattle man has to tell his mob they have what the bushies call a bangtail muster.
Yeah, the bangtail muster. Hopefully it'll be back in 2022, hey? Now, you've no doubt heard about the mice plagues that have been causing big problems for farmers in Queensland and New South Wales. Well, now it's their dung, which is causing massive headaches for sorghum growers and exporters. There is zero tolerance for mouse poo in grain export standards, and many growers are now having truckloads turned away at the ports. John Daly's been taking a look at the issue and filed this report.
This is a maturing sorghum crop. There are live mice active in this particular crop.
So what happens here is, as the head's maturing, the mouse comes up the stalk at night, and so as he's having a feed, mice tend to defecate at the same time as they eat. What we think's happening is that's catching in the whorls of the leaves of the plant. We're cutting off below that level to get all the heads into the harvester, and that's collecting some of that defecated material and putting it through the header.
Mouse poo is a small byproduct of mice plagues in Queensland and New South Wales that's creating some big issues for sorghum growers, handlers and exporters. At John Cameron's farm near Toowoomba in southern Queensland, mice droppings have made his crop basically unsellable.
For me in particular, we won't be going to port, so I've actually washed a contract out that I identified just was not going to make spec. So at a cost, we've washed that contract out. We now still have that grain held on farm and currently not able to find a market for it because it's got the double whammy, I guess, of sprout, because it was ready to harvest when we had the March rain. So it's sprouted, plus now it has mouse manure. We're not meeting any of the current specs for that grain, so it's in limbo.
The high level of contamination is also creating a logistical nightmare beyond the farm gate. GrainCorp is Queensland's main grain handler, and its northern senior supply chain manager, Josh Connell, says a high number of grain deliveries are having to be turned away.
Look, as a result of the plague, I think the industry is certainly turning away a lot more. It's hard to put a number on it. It varies, but there's certainly a very large number at the moment that are facing difficulties in having to be either graded on farm or post attempting to deliver somewhere and to get represented so they come back in clean.
Again, some farmers are complaining that GrainCorp's being really strict this season. Is there an extra level of vigilance at receival sites this season?
Oh, there's no extra vigilance. I think it's an obligation on all parties, from the grower, carrier, through to ourselves, to make sure that Australia's international markets are protected. And, as a producer and as a grower and a bulk handler alike, I think we encourage everyone to do all they can to make sure those markets are protected and not put in jeopardy.
That's easier said than done. Mouse baits are in shortage, and efforts to sieve out the mice poo from the crop aren't as successful as hoped.
Yeah, well, at the end of harvest, we were lucky we were holding it on farm. Towards the end of that harvest process, we thought, well, we've got to see what's happening. So we sent a truck full to the depot. That was rejected. We brought that truck full home onto farm. We graded it. We were certainly getting mouse manure out. We could find it in our graded sample. We sent the same truck full then back to the depot, and he got knocked off again. This time they found a large piece of mouse manure in that sample, which was great. So that was larger than the 2 mil sieve we're using to try and get the little stuff out. At that point in time, I ran up the white flag and said, well, really, there's not much hope.
At the moment, the sorghum export market in China is very attractive and paying a premium, but AgForce President Brendan Taylor says the mice poo situation is creating a lot of pain amongst farmers and exporters wanting to access it.
There is a significant premium for export grain over the domestic market, and of course, that's where people are wanting to take advantage of that. A lot of forward sales done in the spring on the back of a wet forecast. Turned out to be a very dry spring, so we had probably a lot of growers washing out contracts early in the piece, Julie, from no production. And then we had the mice issues. So when you're not meeting your standards, there's contracts being washed, having to be washed out, or late deliveries. So there'll be penalties for late deliveries. And of course, the crop's late, so it's taking its time to mature, but it's also creating major problems at the port for the exporters. They don't want to be turning away trucks. They've got ships tied up wanting to be filled.
So is this holding up shipments?
It absolutely is, yep. There's ships that have been booked for loading in Brisbane that have been held up and been sent to other ports purely on the delays created by not being able to fill the vessels on time with these grading issues and rejection issues. The grain's certainly there. There's been some fantastic sorghum yields around, but unfortunately, with these contamination issues from the beloved bloody mice, it's creating problems at both ends now.
That's AgForce President Brendan Taylor speaking there to John Daly. Now, just quickly to some live export news, I'm joined in the studio by Dan Fitzgerald. Dan, there's been a bit of an incident over in Townsville regarding some crew members of a ship seeking asylum. What can you tell us?
Yeah, Matt. So 12 crewmen from the Polaris 3, they left the ship after it docked in Townsville last week, and they've refused to reboard and are now seeking asylum in Australia. One man was initially unaccounted for, but he's turned himself into police overnight. They have all been COVID tested and come back negative. So the ship itself, it's left Townsville, now on its way to Jakarta. And the asylum seekers will have their assessment processed, and Border Force says that they might be granted permanent protection visas provided they meet the relevant criteria.
Right, this is 12 of them. 12. Stepped off the boat and refused to get back on it.
That's it. There's more details on ABC News Online.
Thanks for that, Dan. That's all we've got time for on today's Country Hour. Enjoy the rest of your Monday and keep it rural.